Gilchrist, Harvard and Spadina.
Okay, 1253 Baptist, Department 4, going to the airport.
Right.
Boring, eh?
What do you mean?
If any more damsels in distress call, I'll let you know.
Krista? Oh, jeez. October 30th, 91. What's the difference between driving cab in the daytime or at night? Julie Swenson. If Eddie hadn't caught the flu, if I wasn't driving days to cover for him. Sometimes you think you got something handled, or at least behind you, and then somebody comes along and it all starts up again. Like how my father died.
Hi.
Oh. Hi.
I'm sorry. Did I wake you up?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm on duty. It's okay. I'm working a double shift, like, all night and now today, because one of the guys is sick.
Are you sure it's okay?
Yeah. I turned and looked at her. At first, all I could see was eyes. She had one of those faces some girls have where you fall right into their eyes. Huge, dark eyes and a small, pretty mouth and white skin and... the eyes.
I'm going to, 472 Silver Birch Road. I've got it written down. It's supposed to be somewhere in Scarborough or near Scarborough. I forget which.
Well, that's a clue. I'll look it up. If this was Big River, it'd be a snap. I'd turn left at the train station, go down to the big white house on the corner, take a left.
Oh?
But it's not, so... Silver Birch Avenue, Silver Birch Crescent, Silver Birch Road.
With the big wooden moose in the park in the middle of town? That Big River?
You're kidding. Are you from... No, you're not from Big River. I know everybody.
I was.
You're kidding. Really? How could I miss you?
Oh, well, I was, like, small. 4 or 5, I think. I stayed with his family for about a year. I remember that moose.
Walter.
What?
But that's his name.
Oh, right.
So, I mean, what family did you stay with?
Davidson, I think.
Joe Davidson on Harley Street.
And that's how it started. I drove her out to Silver Birch Road and she talked all the way. Because I was from home, I guess, or near home anyway. Northerners feel like Newfoundlanders when it comes to Southern Ontario, like being in a foreign country.
So I'm kind of scared.
Well, I'd be kind of scared, too.
Yeah. It took me over 3 years once I made up my mind to do it. They just keep bouncing you around from this agency to that one to this government department. I even had to hire a lawyer once. But I found out. And now I know everything. When I finally found out who she was and where she lived, mailing that letter, actually letting go of it and hearing it drop through the slot, that was the hardest thing I've ever done in my life. Until now.
What'd you say? I mean, in the letter.
Oh, dear Mrs. Layton, don't faint or anything when you read this, but I'm your daughter. And a lot of other stuff. Everything I'd found out. When and where I was born, how I was put up for adoption in Thunder Bay, even though I was born in St. Catharines, which is kind of strange until you think about it. She was only 17 when I was born, and her father was like this prominent businessman in town. And I sent her a couple of photographs I had from when I was real small, and some more right up until now. I didn't do a guilt trip or anything. I don't feel she has anything to be guilty about. I had to work my way through all my feelings with this social worker before they'd even release any information at all.
What kind of feelings?
Oh, resentment, hostility, stuff.
Oh.
I really didn't feel anything like that, but I had to talk about it as if I did, just to get by this person, you know? Anyway, I wrote and told her that she was my birth mother, and that I would like very much to meet her if she felt okay about meeting me. And if she did, she should call me at this number.
And she did.
Yeah! And I thought I was going to die. My voice was shaking, and I started to cry, and she started to cry. It was great.
Julie, guess what?
What?
We're here. Silver Birch Road.
Oh, God.
Houses are nice.
Yeah.
Expensive. It's in this block.
Where? Can you wait?
What do you mean?
Wait for me, just in case?
I invited you.
Yeah?
It'll be okay.
What if she doesn't like me?
She will. I mean, I like you, and I'm just a cab driver.
No, you're not.
Well, I'm not just a cab driver, but I'm a cab driver. I'll wait until... It'll be okay.
Before she got out, I wrote my phone number down on that piece of paper with the address and handed it back to her. Just in case. Sometimes she didn't have anything better to do, you know. I waited 5 minutes. Julie stuck her head back out the front door, smiled, waved, and I drove off. That's that, I said to myself. She's gone.
Hello?
Walker?
Yeah. Julie?
Hi.
Hi.
You sound... Did I wake you again?
Well,
I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. No, I'm glad you woke me. So, how did it go?
Oh, it was great. Really. It was really great.
Great. Where are you now?
Back at the hotel. I'm just gathering up my stuff. She's picking me up later.
That's good.
Yeah. Can I see you?
There were two places I figured I could take her. Either to this blues club on Queen Street that I found my third week in Toronto that's always crowded and noisy and weird, or this little restaurant near Bloor and Bathurst that's quiet and dark and romantic and cheap, or I could take her to both, in either order. When I saw her standing in the lobby of the hotel waiting for me, a beret perched on her head at an angle, her hands plunged into the pockets of her jacket, her face drawn, her eyes luminous, I knew. The restaurant.
This is nice.
Yeah. I hope you didn't mind riding the subway.
No, it was interesting.
I'm going to try to save up, you know, get a car, an old junker, probably, but anyway, wheels.
Sounds good.
It's the insurance. The insurance would kill you. $2,000 or something like that.
How old are you?
How old are you?
20.
Oh.
How old are you?
19. I'll be 20 in March.
So you're here all by yourself, in a big city. Why?
Oh, just time to move on, I guess. Big river. It's small, but it's crowded, too. Mother, 6 sisters.
Really?
Really. 3 of them are married, so brother-in-law's 2. And they think they know everything, brother-in-law's, and nieces and nephews, and 3 sisters still at home. Crowded.
Sounds sort of nice to me.
Oh, do you smoke?
Yep.
I roll my own. You want one?
Oh, I've got my own, but okay.
Actually, I want to be a writer. Jack Kerouac. You know him?
No.
Ginsberg, Burroughs, Benigetti, Kesey, Corso.
Sorry.
50s. The Beat Generation. No? Well, I like all those guys, so anyway, I'm just drifting for a while.
Oh.
Looking for a novel to write, I guess.
Have you found one?
Nope. I keep a journal. I write everything down. I figure if I do it enough, I'll know what to write someday.
Makes sense.
I guess.
What about your father?
What?
You mentioned your mother and your sisters and everyone.
Oh, yeah. He died. So, listen. It was okay, your reunion? It went all right?
Yeah, it was great. I told her all about myself. I'm a nurse's aide at Victoria Hospital in Thunder Bay, blah, blah, blah. All the way back to my first tooth. And she told me all about herself. And her husband was there. And he didn't seem to mind. I mean, a surprise and everything. All of a sudden, his wife has this grown-up daughter.
Right.
When she was out of the room, he told me that he'd known there'd been a baby. She told him just before they'd gotten married, so it wasn't a big surprise. Everything went really well. She wants me to come to their cottage. We leave at 5 this morning so we can see the sunrise and everything.
Oh.
Then we'll have the whole week together to just get to know each other. Just the two of us.
Sounds perfect to me.
Yeah. It is. Walker?
What?
I don't think she's my mother.
AP cab. Okay. Stand out by the front door. 5 minutes.
I thought you drove a double shift. How come you're not in bed?
I'm not tired.
It's 2 a.m.
No, I'm still not tired. Where's Mr. Piatelli?
Well, he's supposed to be covering for you, but every time I give him a fare, he's got some reason why it's not a good idea to pick them up. You want a coffee?
No, thanks.
And when I call him, he says he's here or he's there, but I know exactly where he is.
Huh?
Sitting in Tim Horton's parking lot, reading the paper and eating donuts. What a stoop.
It's his cab, his business.
Yeah, down the toilet.
Krista, what do you think the chances are of me borrowing Mr. Piatelli's car?
Are you kidding? 1 in 1,000. That's not a car, Walker. That's a 1959 pink Cadillac, all original parts, polished within an inch of its life.
Yeah, well, what do you think he'd say?
No.
Oh, jeez. I need a car.
Why?
Well, because there's this girl.
This girl?
Yeah, I just met her. Like today?
Oh.
I think she might be in trouble. Well, she's probably not in trouble, but I just think... Well, I need a car.
Oh, you do? Well, why? I thought you had a room.
What? No, I don't mean that. I mean, I might have to go somewhere.
Oh, well, go then, but you won't be going in Alfonso's car. I'm busy. I've got things to do.
The keys are in his office. I'm going to have to borrow them. I don't have any other choice.
Neither do I.
Pardon?
Nothing.
So anyway, I have to take it. Can you tell him?
When are you going to have it back?
9:10 in the morning.
I see.
I don't know how she could see. She was looking into the corner. She didn't turn around. Sat there motionless for a moment. Then she started thumbing through some invoices. I left. Krista. I don't know exactly what she expects. Sits in her wheelchair making wisecracks all night. One time we went next door to have breakfast together and she used her crutches. By the time we got back, she was really tired out, but she pretended she wasn't. Truth is, I'm afraid to show her how much I do like her because it's heavy, and I don't want to hurt her. But there's no use pretending. Krista and her wheelchair and her crutches and everything, that it isn't heavy. I've thought about taking her out, but how would you go to a movie? And that blues club on Queen Street, it's 2 stories up. So I left. 5 after 5 in the morning, a gray Saab Turbo pulled up in front of the small hotel Julie was staying in on Lombard Street. Julie came out of the lobby carrying a suitcase and a flight bag. The trunk on the Saab sprung open, and then a tall, slim woman in rusty red corduroy pants and jacket got out of the car and embraced her. She helped Julie put her bags into the trunk. Then they got back into the car, pulled out onto Jarvis, heading south towards the Gardener. As they passed by me, I could see Julie's pale face through the window. She was smiling. She looked really hopeful and frightened all at the same time. Mrs. Layton circled around the city, then drove north on Highway 400. I followed her, staying back a safe distance. It was still dark. I didn't really know why I was following her, following Julie. As soon as she'd said that she didn't think that woman was her mother, then she'd immediately changed her mind. Of course she was her mother. It was just nerves. She was so nervous and tense, everything was magnified 100 times. Her mother's smile wasn't as warm as she thought it would be. Her hugs, kisses, not quite emotional enough. But that was unfair. After all, this was a daughter she hadn't seen in 20 years, perhaps only saw once, briefly. She was expecting too much. It would take time. And yet, shouldn't there be something, some immediate recognition, an instinct? Yes, this is me, a part of me that I'm looking at. And back and forth she went, first taking one side, then the other, until she was exhausted, until there was nothing left for her to say. So for some reason, I leaned over the plates of lasagna and I kissed her. She smiled. She even laughed. And that was that. We didn't talk about it. I didn't tell her that I thought her first instinct around this Mrs. Layton sounded right to me. And that getting up at 5 to drive north to see the sunrise seemed more than a little weird. So there I was, cruising along 1,000 yards behind the unsuspecting Julie, trying to stay inconspicuous in a pink Cadillac and wanting to protect her, but not knowing how or even from whom or why I felt that way in the first place. I was confused.
Oh, it's so beautiful. Smell the pine.
Yes. Great place, isn't it? Well, come on. Let's go inside.
The water's so still, peaceful, like glass.
Grab your bags. Here, I'll help you.
Shona, you don't have anything?
Oh, no. I leave a wardrobe up here. I'm up here all the time. Come on, dear, let's go in.
I want to show you the place. Didn't think it would be so big.
It started out as a log cabin, and people kept adding wings. Well, that's what David told me anyway.
Come on, Julie, dear. Tuck inside.
It was light by the time they turned onto a rolling blacktop road and then into a narrow dirt laneway. I eased the Cadillac into the lane just in time to see the brake lights flash up ahead as the sob eased slowly over the rocky brow of a hill. The laneway forked. I turned off, drove at right angles to them for a moment, and pulled the car up into a clump of birch trees, got out and half walked, half ran through the dew-wet grass and branches down the hill towards the lake. Now, I was hiding, soaked to the skin, behind a tree, sweating, panting, and watching Julie. Looking as happy as anything going into the cottage. I just stood there panting, steam coming out of my mouth. She was happy. I, on the other hand, was a fool. And then, a man appeared, walking along the path below me. He stopped for a moment, still in the trees, looking up the slope towards the cottage. He was a tall man, wearing coveralls, a duffel bag slung over his shoulder. Suddenly, he moved off the path down to the edge of the lake, circled below the cottage and then up another knoll and disappeared into a small guest cabin. And then I noticed the silence. No loons called out in the lake, no birds singing, no insects buzzing in the gloom of the woods. Just a heavy gray silence, as if all of nature was holding its breath, as if something terrible had happened and the shock was still rippling through the moist, thick air.
This is my favorite time of day. I always walk along the lake in the morning. If I miss it, then the rest of the day, it just seems off somehow.
I don't know how much sun we're going to see. It's misty.
We'll walk down as far as the point. The sun will burn it off, and then it'll be spectacular. You'll see.
I still can't believe I'm here. I mean, with you.
I know, dear. Same here. It's wonderful.
Yeah. Well, you sure lucked in, eh?
What do you mean?
Oh, just, I mean, such a nice cottage and your house, and to have a husband like Mr. like David, who owns his own business and everything.
Yes, I suppose so.
You deserve it. I mean, he's lucky, too. I'm just happy for you.
Well, I am lucky. I'm especially lucky now.
Me, too. What do you want? Should I keep calling you Shona or Mom or... I mean, it doesn't matter to me, but just so I know.
Mom, of course.
Okay.
Well, let's get going then. Oh, no.
What's the matter?
Oh, I forgot my camera. I want to take some pictures of you. I'll run back. You go on. Just follow the path.
I can go back.
No, and it'll only take me a second. You walk on. It goes right along the lake. I'll catch up to you before you've gone very far.
Well, okay.
No, you go on. I'll catch up.
Julie hesitated for a moment, a kind of puzzled expression on her face as she watched the other woman hurry back towards the cottage. And then she turned and walked right below me along the dirt path, looking down at the water glistening darkly below her, and then disappeared among the trees. A game. Some terrible game was in play, but what was it? The answer seemed to be close to me, in the mist itself, some shape, some face, just out of reach. The willowy tall woman climbed the steps of the cottage and went inside. A moment, and then the man in the coverall came out of the guest cabin and hurried up the slope. Now I could see the woman again, standing just inside the door of the cottage waiting for him. She opened it and he rushed inside. Two players playing what? I wasn't sure what to do. I knew I had Julie somewhere safely behind my back. If I could just see something, overhear a conversation, pick up just one missing piece, then the game would be clear. I began to creep along the edge of the path, reaching the clearing, then began to circle up the slope behind a screen of trees. They came out of the cottage together, running hand in hand, the man now dressed in a business suit carrying the duffel bag. They passed the gray Saab and got into a Volvo station wagon that was pulled up behind the cottage. The motor roared to life. It backed out. The car bumped up the rocky hill and over the brow, and the two of them disappeared. Now only the cottage, the gray Saab sitting there, and silence again. A profound ringing silence and games. Husband and wife games? Or lovers? And I knew. I ran. Ran back down the dirt path, almost flying through the shadows and over the knolls, running to catch Julie, running before it was too late.
Julie! Julie, stop!
path twisted down right to the edge of the lake, crossed a little clearing by a pebbly beach, and there, on the other side of the clearing, against a wall of dark trees, I saw Julie. She was kneeling, looking towards me, her face absolutely white. I stopped. When she raised her hands up, I could see that they were glistening with blood.
Walker, how did you...
I walked towards her, feeling useless, late, always late. On the path, lying half in the grass and half out, was a middle-aged woman in track pants, a jacket, and running shoes. Julie was cradling the woman's head in her lap. Blood oozed out of the ragged wounds in her scalp, her matted, torn hair.
I was just coming along, and she was here. I didn't know what to do, Walker. I think she's dead.
I knelt down beside Julie, and there was a question, a horrible question, beginning to take shape in her face. I felt under the woman's chin, no pulse. Her eyes were open, staring at nothing now. Great, dark, luminous eyes.
Walker, oh my God, who is she?
Want more coffee?
No. Do you?
No. If I drink any more, I'll get hyper.
Geez, that'd be a change, wouldn't it?
Ha. So, what's going on, Walker? Am I supposed to make you feel better?
What?
That Julie Swenson business. Ever since that happened, you've been on such a downer. So I'm just wondering, is that why you invited me to breakfast? Am I supposed to be comic relief?
What? God, you say stupid things sometimes.
Just wondering.
Besides, I've invited you to breakfast before.
Once. Anyway, it was awful. I don't care. And I wouldn't mind seeing you smile again. It's just... I'm tired of being everybody's sidekick, okay?
Sure.
Sometimes I feel like I'm talking to a wall when I talk to you, Walker.
And vice versa.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Jeez.
Jeez is right. So, what happens anyway? I mean, to her.
They're sending her home tomorrow, flying her back courtesy of the police department. She'll have to come back here a few times, of course, before it's all over.
Do they have a good case?
Oh, yeah. Husband and girlfriend want to do in wife to avoid losing property and money in a divorce settlement, but don't know how to go about masterminding the crime. Then, out of the blue, a girl writes to say she's looking for her birth mother, the man's wife. But the wife never sees the letter. The husband intercepts it. And now they have the perfect dupe. His girlfriend pretends to be the birth mother. The real mother goes up to spend some time at the cottage, as she always does in the fall. Goes on her routine 6 o'clock morning walk around the lake. The husband kills her, leaving the girl. Julie, to find her real mother on the pathway. Dead.
Nice people.
Yeah.
But Walker, wouldn't she just tell the police what she knew?
Who would believe her? She did just as they wanted. She was covered in her mother's blood. They had hidden the murder weapon. An old hatchet wrapped in a piece of Julie's clothing, along with a pair of small bloody gloves, up on a rafter in the cottage. And she was alone with her mother, as far as anyone knew. If the night clerk at the hotel had seen her being picked up by a gray sob, well, all the better. The gray sob was still there, and Julie, well, obviously she was deranged. Handed from one foster home to another, probably abused along the way, found her birth mother and then, for some unaccountable reason, flew into a blind rage and killed her. Whatever corroborative evidence the police would need, the husband would certainly be pleased to provide. And then there would have been notes a certain social worker would have had on Julie, too. They might even have pulled it off.
Except she was lucky enough to get into the right cab with the right cab driver.
I guess...
who can't resist a pretty face.
Well, I guess I should go.
Yeah.
Thank you, Walker. Thank you for...
It's okay, I know.
What do you know?
I mean, what you're going through.
I didn't even have a chance to... How will I ever forget when I...
I don't know. Time? That's what they said to me anyway.
What do you mean?
Nothing.
No, what do you mean they said to you?
Just... when my father died, you know.
Oh.
So anyway, you'll call me when you come back?
Of course I will. What would I do without you? I'll be okay. I'm determined. I will be okay. Goodbye, Walker.
She kissed me. A quick, fast kiss, her eyes still frightened like a deer caught in a headlight. And then she turned and walked away, looking back once. My arms jerked up to wave like some crazed robot. She smiled and disappeared. I stood there for a long moment. Then I walked back to my cab.
Walker, where are you?
Coming in from the airport.
Did you see her off?
Yeah.
She'll be back.
Yeah.
So, what's the matter?
Just old stuff. It brought back old stuff.
Like what?
Like my father. We were out at our camp fishing, and it was like at night, and I woke up and he wasn't there. So I got up and I started to shiver. I don't know why. I just stood there shivering for a while. And then I went to the door. And then I heard my old man. He killed himself.
Walker? Walker? You okay?
Yeah. So that's the difference between driving cab at night and during the day. Julie Swenson. Half of me's glad I met her. The other half, well, I'd just as soon have passed. Anyway, I'm doing all right. I've got my room over Durang's Pawn Shop on Church Street. Still driving cab for Mr. Piatelli, even though I keep stealing his Cadillac, or so he says. And I still roll my own cigarettes. Hey, maybe I will ask Krista out.
You have just heard episode 4 of Midnight Cab, The Mystery of the Motherless Child, written by the series creator James W. Nichol. Featured in the cast were David Ferry as Walker and Jacqueline Samuda as Krista, with Suzanne Bélanger as Julie and Carol Galloway as Shona. Music for the series is composed by Milan Kimlicka, and the casting consultant is Linda Grierson. The recording engineer is Joanne Anka, with sound effects by Matt Wilcott. The production assistant is Nancy Dow. Midnight Cab is produced and directed in Toronto by Bill Howell.